According to the Wall Street Journal, pro-Jakarta East Timor mobs have rampaged through an area in Indonesia in a bid to disrupt Monday's UN-sponsored independence vote, which is coming up, yes, on Monday, an independence vote for East Timor. Very, very controversial. A lot of violence. I say controversial, hotly contested, because, frankly, there are those in East Timor who are against independence and those who are for it, and so it's a very hotly contested and violent issue, and we're going to talk a little about it. And a bit obscure, I think, for most Americans. And so we're going to talk a bit about it with Imran Anwar. He is founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of the Internet email in Pakistan, and, of course, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George.
Well, first of all, what the heck is going on? This East Timor is an area way down south, as they say, in Indonesia, one of the islands of Indonesia, areas of Indonesia. And what's the issue?
Well, basically, George, the story goes back to the time when East Timor was actually a colony which did not really belong to Indonesia directly, but it was almost close enough for them to take over once Portugal left. It was a Portuguese colony. It was a very poorly managed and very ill-considered sort of colony. Not much development was done there by the Portuguese, and they basically just got up and left one day, leaving the Indonesians the opportunity to basically move in 1975. And in a way, the idea was for them to integrate it into their own country, into Indonesia. But there has been some resistance to that, because it's almost like being colonized by somebody else as far as some of these Timorese are concerned.
Now, we should mention that, if I'm not mistaken, the East Timorese are overwhelmingly Catholic. And, of course, Indonesia is overwhelmingly Muslim, give or take a large Chinese Buddhist contingency. But am I correct there? It's a Catholic area.
Correct. And
left over from Portugal.
There's a good mix of populations there, because there's a lot of Indonesians who were also settled there over the last, you know, mm-hmm. decades.
Inevitably, that's the kind of thing that exacerbates and complicates the situation. But it is a Catholic majority, I think, in East Timor. And that, and of course, we have learned the lesson around the world that inevitably these religious conflicts are difficult to resolve.
Correct, George. And at the same time, the thing to keep in mind also is that people tend to have a desire for independence now. You know, what they're seeking independence from is sometimes not very clear, mm-hmm. because in some cases it can be very clear where people know what they want or don't want to do, or what their expectations were 50 years ago, Kashmir being an issue like that. However, in the case of East Timor, they were actually colonized forever and did not actually expect to have freedom any time soon.
Yeah.
So when the Portuguese upped and left, that's when they basically felt that there was an opportunity for them to be independent of anybody colonizing them. Now, Indonesia's approach has been, and I'm not saying that it has worked very well for them, but their attitude or approach, or at least their stance, has been that we will integrate this. This is a part of our country. It will be one of the provinces of Indonesia, and as a matter of fact, it's one of the provinces we will do more for in terms of money spent on development, money spent on infrastructure, and money spent on the welfare of the people. How far that works is a debatable question, but that was the approach that the Indonesians took. But I think religion aside, sometimes just that, oh, I want to be independent, spirit that comes in, or that statement that gets made, then takes on life of its own, which makes it very hard to go back or to revert to the status quo.
Well, and of course, the problem is Indonesia is an interesting country anyway. It's made up of hundreds of islands scattered all over that region. And East Timor is down at the more or less southern end of all of these, of this configuration of Indonesian islands. Obviously, it's quite a ways from Jakarta, for one thing. But the other thing is that who knows what should be Indonesian and what should not. But more to the point, you've brought up a very good point. idea was that pretty much was an Indonesian colony and part of Indonesia, and they were heading in that direction. And there are those, am I correct, in East Timor who are very much against, and they're not just Muslims, but many of them, even the Catholics, are against independence. So that's why they're having this vote, and they violently oppose each other. Those two factions, either, even if they're
George,
if they're Catholic.
Sorry,
I say even if they're both, even if you take two factions of Catholics, those who are for independence and those who are against it, it's a very violent opposition.
Absolutely, and George, that is the issue here is not that it's Muslims coming in to dominate a Christian majority area, etc. But, you know, in the media, you will always see that get play because if Party A comes and tries to quell a rebellion by Party B, if they are A and B are opposite religions, that makes for a very good story. What the media will usually forget to tell us and tell the audience is that the local community, the supposedly the oppressed community has its own share of people on either side of the issue, which does not make for as much, you know, like media excitement, so to speak.
Well, let me ask about this. They're going to vote, and theoretically that resolves the issue. But you wonder, because in Northern Ireland, for example, on a number of occasions they've had votes, but the problem is they have a majority of Protestants and a minority of Catholics, and of course that vote always goes for the Protestants, and they always want to stay with England, and that doesn't resolve anything. How do you assess what is likely to happen here and what is the likely longer-term complication, or will this be resolved?
Let's take a look at the situation. One, George, is that it's a very remote area with less than a million people. I think the Wall Street Journal mentioned something like 850,000 as a population.
Mm-hmm.
Within that, you have a population that is divided very, very vehemently on the issue. Then you have an area which has really very few developed natural resources. Yes, there are some reserves of oil and gas that might be there and other resources might be found, but there's very little developed resources there. Additionally, this is a province that was, even as a colony of Portugal, was one of the least cared for areas. So literally there is almost no infrastructure. Now, the Wall Street Journal also mentioned something else pretty interesting in their story, that the Indonesians actually put in a lot more money into this area than into their existing provinces. Now, part of it might be because they wanted to look good, or maybe they were building the infrastructure for their own military movement to put down the local guerrilla warfare that was taking place, etc. Whatever be the reason, literally 100% or 1,000% or 1,000-fold increase took place in infrastructure
mm-hmm.
elements like roads, etc. And if the Indonesians are the owners of things like the power generation plants, for example, or anything else that exists there, if they decide to leave, whether they decide to leave on an overnight basis by turning the, pulling the plug and just walking away, or whether they do it in an orderly fashion, regardless of that, East Timor does not have the resources or the population strength, basically, to be able to stand on its own feet.
Well, in other words, and what you're saying is the consideration, it will be irrelevant if they vote for independence, but it will be a problem for sure, and maybe the biggest problem ultimately, because even when the French were thinking of, there was, the separatist movement in Canada, there was a great deal of concern about what those French provinces together would be able to add up to in terms of critical mass as an economy, and a lot of thought that they really didn't have what it takes. And that area of Canada is a huge economy and very successful one relative to East Timor, obviously, and relative to a lot of small areas that have tried to be separate regions or autonomous regions, so that their economic base is virtually non-existent.
Absolutely, and in that case, you're looking at a country that can start doing business with the United States with one short airplane flight,
right,
with one local, basically same area code phone call. Basically, in the case of East Timor, we are looking at a potential where you might have a country that would be looking for aid for a very, very long time. In the meantime, even if the Indonesians quietly leave, let's not forget two things that are happening. One is that not only would the infrastructure be potentially pulled away, two, even the people who settled there were contributing to the economy. They were contributing to the fact that everyday things do not continue to function if half the population or a quarter of the population decides to leave because it feels insecure.
I have a feeling, though, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but I have a feeling that they could present a very good case looking at the movement to make an autonomous Palestine or a separate country of Palestine and say, look, you take that West Bank and the Gaza on the other side of Israel, and you got nothing, Charlie, when it comes to economic base. So that's who cares? I mean, that's not something that you worry about anywhere else. If you and I were trying to mediate this and we brought it up, for example.
Absolutely, George. But in the case of the Palestinian issue, people can claim a country called Palestine existed.
Yes, but I'm saying in terms of the economic realities, the East Timor might even have a better economic base than the country of Palestine.
Absolutely. But the second thing they would say is that not only did a country like Palestine exist before it was taken over, but secondly, there are regional partners right alongside it which share a border with it, for example.
Well, they would have a fight about the country because there was never really an official country of Palestine, just a region of Palestine made up of a lot of different ethnicities. But, you know, history gets kind of blurred. There was this big area that was roughly, you know, I mean, it's like saying that the Sahara is a country. But the fact is that it was, you know, these people laid claim to this as their homeland, and there are a lot of practical reasons. You and I know that this issue goes on about making this little tiny country in Palestine into something that may or may not have any economic base. But I suspect that East Timorese separatists could, if that was our big roadblock to them being separate, would make a good case out of this.
Yes, George, but two things where we should not forget the differences are. In the case of Palestine, for example, they still continue, even if the country did not exist.
Right, yeah.
They've continued to export manpower, basically, that has gone into Israel and to other Arab countries.
Yeah.
East Timor does not have that luxury, number one.
Right.
Number two, when we look at the Palestinian issue, I'm sure you might find 1% or 0.5% part of the population that might like the status quo, but you do not have a divided Palestinian population killing each other, whether they should remain a colony of Israel or become an independent nation.
Yeah, I think you've got a good point there. So when they vote on this, and let us say that it looks as though that the majority of the folks there would vote for to be separate. I don't know that it's a done deal, but that's what it looks like from the reports I've read. A, would that be your assessment? And B, what does that resolve, if anything, in terms of conflicts in the region?
George, I personally think it does not resolve anything. It actually probably starts a lot more conflict and a lot more problems for everybody concerned.
In other words, it would be very much like if suddenly they managed to vote to join Ireland, Northern Ireland, if the vote suddenly swung in that direction. Now Ireland would simply inherit the Ulster League and those problems instead of the UK fighting with the IRA.
Absolutely, absolutely. And at the same time, think of the British leaving with all the infrastructure that they have.
Yeah. So now, what does this mean to the region? What does it mean to Indonesia specifically? Because there are other separatist movements cropping up around Indonesia, the little region farther north, and I can't, it's spelled A-C-E-H, and I can't pronounce it, but they have some tensions building there and so on and so forth. So what does this mean to Indonesia, which is a very fragmented country made up, as we've said, of a lot of islands, really?
George, it means the same thing that it means to countries like India, which have always tried to quell the rebellion in the Punjab, where the Sikhs wanted their own independent homeland, or their desire to keep the Kashmiris under their control. Because once you let one province go independent, no matter how right they are or how much they deserve their freedom, the others who might think that they deserve it or may actually deserve it will actually lead to the crumbling of the union as it exists.
Now, it brings up to me one of the most complicated and maybe subjective and questions in international politics, and that is, when is it right for a sovereign state to defend its right to maintain itself by preventing separatists from just branching off anytime they want to through military force and whatever else? And when is it wrong? That is a complicated issue. I mean, for example, if Texas suddenly in the United States decided to say we're going to be a separate country again, there would be and there was a faction that was pushing for that, and they got pretty violent. We would understandably, react to that probably in kind. And so, when is it right? When is it wrong? How does the international community make that assessment?
George, you know my feelings on that, and the issue is the international community makes its decisions based upon what suits its purpose in the geopolitical give-and-take arena at that time.
Given how complicated the issue is, you can almost understand why. I mean, what serves our purpose? What's in our national interest? Since there's no other way to resolve this, there's no seemingly no answer. We do it based on our national interest. But what would your advice be? I mean, looking at it as a kind of a political scientist, what would your assessment be? How should it be determined?
George, I have several takes on that, and I won't go into details on all of them, but several ways of looking at this. One, of course, is the fact of how unified a local population is in demanding what it's demanding. Mm-hmm. How capable are they of standing on their own feet, independent stable and economically flourishing? Additionally, when did the problem start? What was the root cause of the problem? If the problem is in the last 5 years, we are a lot more aggressive about solving problems that happened right in front of our eyes. For example, Iraq invading Kuwait brought along a whole Gulf War. But something that happened 50 years ago, for example, the Indian occupation of Kashmir or, the Palestinian issue, tend to be discussed. But something that happened 200 years ago might sort of fall through the cracks, or something that happened 4,000 years ago now. How far do you go? Even 200 years, are we going to give the United States back to the Native Americans, for example?
Always been my vote anyway, but as long as I don't have to give up my property.
Exactly, and that's, you multiply that by 250 million people and you have a little bit of a problem. So basically the way I would suggest looking at things would be to look at things that have happened in the last about 100 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. Because things in the last 50 years are already on the table. Kashmir, Palestine, etc. are already on the table. Things that have happened less than 100 years ago, and where you have a major population, a unified population against an oppressive, and I mean seriously oppressive, occupier or a military presence ensuring the quiet subjugation of the will of the people, that is definitely an area we need to look into and solve the problem.
Well, we'll talk about this after the vote. We're out of time for this one. My fear is the world, in a century, we'll be looking at the world map, and it'll be a lot of little lintel-sized countries. And when you look in the atlas, it'll say each one of them has a separatist movement. But other than that, we will be following this particular issue, Imran, and thank you much for joining us today.
Well, George, what I would like to leave you with then is, let's not forget that no man is an island unto himself, but almost every man is a country, or a person is a country to themselves. So maybe that's where we're headed in the long run.
I hope not. Imran, thank you, sir, and take care.
Thank you.
Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia.